All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today we're beginning our year-end review series of the Falcons 2018 season, going position by position, of course, starting with the quarterbacks.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman. Been covering the Falcons for many years at FalcFans.com, on Twitter, at FalcFans, and, of course, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. Today, we're kicking off our year-in-review series that I've sort of been procrastinating on for most of the month of January. We're going to be going position by position. This is going to sort of be, you know, we'll probably do 2 to 3 or 4 of these per week for the next couple of weeks to sort of get through each position group, talking about sort of my takeaways, my main narratives, if you want to say, my thoughts on various positions of the Falcons season. We're going to kick things off starting with the quarterbacks. We're going to be talking quite a bit about Matt Ryan and sort of my impressions of sort of two sort of seasons that Matt Ryan had within one, where he was very good for part of the season and pretty okay for the other part of the season. And then we'll sort of wrap things up talking about sort of what the Falcons backup quarterback situation could look like in 2019. But let's jump right in talking about Matt Ryan and sort of the two different seasons he's had. And, you know, for shorthand ways, because I'm going to be referring to sort of these two aspects of the season, for basically 7 games out of this season, Matt Ryan played at an MVP level from weeks 2 to 9. Certain statistical metrics that I'll touch upon in just a moment indicate that Matt Ryan was playing at or well above an MVP level at historically good levels. And then for the other 9 games of the season, that week 1 performance against Philadelphia, as well as starting with the Cleveland Browns game in week 10 and the rest of the season, for a 9-game stretch of games where Matt Ryan essentially was playing at what is essentially NFL average for starting quarterbacks in the league. And so for the sake of shorthand, when I'm referring to that 7-game stretch, I'll often refer to it as either the first half of the season or the MVP stretch of the season. And I will refer to the other part of the season as either the other part or the part where Matt Ryan was performing at an average level or his quote-unquote second season or whatever you want to say. Just, you know, because I'm referring to that quite a bit as I touch upon sort of what the main topic of discussion I'm going to have today. And so just to have that shorthand. And the other thing before we get there, I do want to talk about the main statistic I'm using in order to come to those two conclusions as far as Matt Ryan having this high and low end of this 2018 season wrapped into one, is the adjusted net yards per attempt, which here from now on will be referred to as ANYA. And for those of you that don't know, adjusted net yards per attempt, if there is one stat that can be considered the end-all be-all of quarterback play, of measuring passing offenses in the league, it would be, and I'm not saying that there is one end-all be-all, but the one stat that you should definitely pay the most attention to is adjusted net yards per attempt, or ANYA. And in this case, Matt Ryan's ANYA during that stretch of games from weeks 2 to 9, where he was playing at an MVP level, was 9.44. And just for the sake of comparison, during his MVP season in 2016, his ANYA during that season, that entire season, was like 9.04 or 9.05. I'm going off the top of my head. And I, if I'm not mistaken, at no point during that entire 2016 season did he have a stretch of 7 consecutive games where his ANYA was higher than 9.1 or 9.2. So basically the argument then that you could make is that Matt Ryan, for at least for the 7 games from weeks 2 to 9 in 2018, was actually outperforming, based off of ANYA, his MVP season. What sort of stood out about the MVP season is that he played it that way throughout the entire year as opposed to just one half of the season. Now, for the other 9 games, when Matt Ryan was quote-unquote mediocre this 2018 season, his ANYA was 6.44. Now, that is essentially what you would consider to be an average starting quarterback. You look at like Kirk Cousins on you for the entire 2018 season, it was like 6.48. Jameis Winston was like 6.38. You look at Matt Ryan's Anya combined from 2011 to 2015, the 5 years prior to his MVP season, it was about 6.51, and you had some good seasons and some bad seasons mixed into that. So by and large, he was, you know, 6.44 is not great, basically. It's not terrible, but it's not great either. And so that's sort of the differences between the highs and the lows of Matt Ryan. And so one of the things that we'll have to sort of see with Dirk Koetter is, can he get more of the high and as opposed to the low? And just to throw another stat at you to sort of to hammer home this point of sort of how effective and how impactful this was, is during that 7-game stretch where Matt Ryan was playing at the MVP level, the Falcons averaged 30.9 points per game. Again, for context, I think over the course of the entire 2016 season, playoffs included, they averaged like 34 points a game. I think like it's 33.8 or something like that. So they were basically playing at the same level they played throughout that 2016 season through that 7-game stretch. Not only Matt Ryan as an individual, but also the offense in terms of at least points per game as a whole. During the other 9 games of the season, the Falcons averaged 22 points a game. Now, for the sake of comparison, through the entire 2013 season, where the Falcons finished that season ranked 20th in points scored that year, they averaged about 22 points a game. So basically, during this MVP stretch, not only was Matt Ryan's performance, but you can guess it, obviously, the Falcons' offense functioned at a high level, because we all know that quarterbacks have the biggest impact of any position on the football field. And so basically, you saw an offense that performed, you know, comparable to what Kyle Shanahan and Matt Ryan performed at in 2016 when, you know, it was an all-time great offense. And then for the other part of the season, you saw what was essentially a below-average offense with, not coincidentally, middling performance from Matt Ryan. And we'll come back in a moment and talk a little bit more about some of those, the differences between the two halves of the season for Matt Ryan, as well as my theory as what was the main catalyst, not the only catalyst, but the main catalyst as to what caused Matt Ryan to have these two different sort of halves of the season in just a moment. But before we do, since we're talking quarterbacks, you know who played quarterback in this league for several years? That's Sage Rosenfels. And every Tuesday, Sage joins the host of the Locked On NFL podcast, Matt Williamson, to talk about various topics around the league. And definitely want to check out the Locked On NFL podcast each and every day. Wherever you get your Locked On podcast, you can find it there. Your team every day. All right, so we're talking about sort of the two halves of the season that Matt Ryan had, where at one part of the season from weeks 2 to 9, he was performing at an MVP level. And for the other 9 games of the season, most of which came in the second half of the season, he was performing at basically what is an average Matt Ryan level of play in league-wide average level of play for a quarterback. And so what's interesting about that, before we get to some other additional stats, at least as far as Matt Ryan is concerned, you know, Dan Quinn is of the mantra hashtag physicality, but there isn't really a correlation between the success of the team's ability to run the football during those portions of the year. In fact, you know, they ran the ball about 36.5% of the time during Matt Ryan's MVP stretch, which was 24th highest in the league, and their success rate was about 39.9, at least when you just look at the runs by the team's running backs during that stretch of games, which is underwhelming. For the other 9 games, they ran the ball on 33.3% of their plays, which was 30th in the league, and their success rate was like 47.8%, which is actually pretty good in terms of running efficiency, at least when looking at running back runs. And so clearly the point being that there isn't really a correlation between the team's ability to run the ball effectively and in their offense as a production, which sort of shoots a hole into sort of Dan Quinn's seemingly mantra of, you know, bringing more physicality. But we'll talk more about that when we get to the running back and offensive line position reviews, because I do think there is a reason, at least a justifiable reason, why the Falcons want to run the football. But we'll get to that on future episodes. But more stats to throw at you for Matt Ryan, sort of to paint this picture of sort of the Matt Ryan during this MVP stretch and the other stretch of the season. He only fumbled one time during his MVP stretch. He was pressured on about 30% of his dropbacks during that time and had a 99.4 passer rating, which was the second best in the league during that seven-game stretch when he was playing at MVP level. During the other nine games, Matt Ryan fumbled the ball nine times, or he was credited with nine fumbles. One of those fumbles was Calvin Ridley fumbling, so basically eight times in nine games. He was pressured on about 34% of his dropbacks, which 34 to 30% is notable, but not necessarily. It basically accounts for about two more dropbacks a game, so not a huge, huge degree of difference. But his passer rating on those pressures where he was, on those times where he was pressured, was 78.8, which was still above average for the league, you know, 11th best during that stretch of games. But you can basically make the argument that Matt Ryan, despite the pressure he was facing during his MVP stretch, was rising above the pressure and not necessarily doing it to quite the degree during the other stretch of the season, which I think is contributing to why people, and we'll talk about this on future episodes, why people believe, including myself, believe the Falcons offensive line needs to be upgraded. Notably, the fumbles as well contribute to that, because a lot of those fumbles were sack strips that seemed to be a bigger issue during that stretch of games where Matt Ryan was quote-unquote struggling, playing more like an average NFL quarterback. So those are some interesting stats, I think, that sort of paint a picture. But let's talk about why I believe was the main cause to why Matt Ryan had these sort of two different seasons where he played at an MVP level and played at an average level. And I think it has to do with the supporting cast, not so much the offensive line's performance, but I do think it has a lot to do with the wide receiver performance. And I think by and large, when you look at it and you sort of look at the receiver's production during this seven-game stretch where Matt Ryan was playing at an MVP level, and then looking at their production for the other nine games of the season, there is one player that really does stand out. Because when you look at sort of Pro Football Focus's yards per route run, you don't see a significant change from Julio Jones in either stretch of the season. As far as he was number two in yards per route run in both stretches of the season. Same thing goes with Mohamed Sanu. He was basically putting up the same level of production, slightly better during the MVP stretch, but by a very, very small margin. And basically, he was basically able to maintain the same. The one notable difference, and there's a small difference if you look at Marvin Hall, and I think that's a small part that contributes to the narrative that I'm going to suggest, but it was mainly Calvin Ridley. And you look at that during that MVP stretch, Calvin Ridley's yards per route run was 2.53 during that seven-game stretch, which during that stretch of the season, I think, was the seventh highest in the league. Julio Jones, again, was number two at that point. And so essentially you had two essentially number one wide receivers. 2.5 is like on the level of basically what like guys like DeAndre Hopkins put up on a yearly basis. And then you look at sort of the second half of the season where Calvin Ridley, over those nine games, his yards per route run was like 1.27, which I think was like 60-something, ranked 60-something in the league. So basically he was performing at like a average number two, average number three receiver level during that second game stretch. And I think this is sort of the difference between Matt Ryan playing at this sort of elite MVP level than when he's basically quote-unquote average Matt Ryan. And I think this holds up over time when you look back at not only this 2018 season as well as the 2016 season and also in the 2012 season, which you can say those are the three best statistical seasons that Matt Ryan had. And I don't think coincidentally in all those seasons, you had two wide receivers on the Falcons offense, again, for part of this season, for a large chunk of 2016 with Taylor Gabriel, and in 2012 with Roddy and Julio Jones. You had two wide receivers that were essentially 1A and 1B type of wide receivers. And of course, this year you had Ridley and Jones. And again, I know you're tired of me saying this, but this is a big part of the reason why I think Mohamed Sanu's impact on the roster is overrated. But I think, you know, you go back to these seasons and you look at it, I think there's a strong case that you can be made, and we'll talk about this deeper when we get to the wide receiver position, but I think there's a strong argument to be made that when you give Matt Ryan, you know, quote-unquote elite wide receiver play, when he has two sort of number one ish wide receivers that can make plays down the field as Jones did, as Ridley did, as Gabriel did, and yes, even as Roddy White did in 2012. You don't think of Roddy White as a vertical receiver, but when the Falcons did dial up shot plays in that season primarily, they would often go max protect with seven or eight blockers and then send Julio and Roddy deep. Julio would often draw the deep safety in those situations, and that would give Roddy White a lot of one-on-one opportunities that he did do a great job taking advantage of in that 2012 season, which is one of the reasons why when you look at sort of Matt Ryan's deep passing, in a lot of ways, Roddy White was more productive than Julio Jones was in that season in terms of generating big plays. And if you've been a long-time listener to this podcast, you know I'm a big proponent of big plays equals points. And so basically the argument I've basically presenting as I think the biggest catalyst for why Matt Ryan had this MVP level season was because Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley were operating at a really high clip. You also had a little bit of Marvin Hall being productive during that stretch of games and dabbling a little bit as a playmaker during that stretch as well. More so than guys like Sanu, who, you know, continue to contribute as a more of a possession receiver and a chain mover, which is valuable, but I don't think is as valuable as this stat suggests in terms of making this offense go as other people seem to suggest. But again, that's a conversation that we'll have a little bit more context with when we get to the wide receiver position review. But I think what's going to be interesting is sort of with Dirk Koetter taking over this offense is whether or not he can sort of get Jones and Ridley and sort of really maximize those guys to their full potential. Because I think if he can, as Steve Sarkisian was able to do for at least this 7-game stretch, you're going to see this Falcons offense be very productive. And so that's going to be the big question for me. We've seen sort of what this two tales of Matt Ryan season shows, where you get this MVP elite all-time great level of Matt Ryan, which we've seen now throughout 2016 and at least for the first half of 2018. And so that certainly is a player that we're capable of seeing. And I think a lot of that is attributed to him having these high level wide receivers that are playmakers. Again, you get Matt Ryan, basically Matt Ryan's floor is like an A-B+ level quarterback. But in order to get him to that A+ level, I think that is dependent on somewhat on his supporting cast and the scheme and the play calling and all those various factors for him to reach that elite of the elite ceilings that we're hoping to see and have somewhat grown accustomed to seeing over the last couple of seasons. And so that's going to be the big question for Dirk Koetter moving forward. And, you know, depending on what your worldview is on Dirk Koetter, there's reasons to be optimistic. There's reasons to be skeptical of that. I think the good thing that is working in Dirk Koetter's stand, as far as Matt Ryan is concerned, is Matt Ryan is a significantly better quarterback than he was during Dirk Koetter's previous stint. And I think a lot of that is attributed to Matt Ryan's ability to extend plays and succeed off structure, which was a big weakness of his game through the first 5 to 7 years of his career, and has not been, I wouldn't necessarily say it's a strength in the same way that it's a strength of someone like a Patrick Mahomes or Russell Wilson or an Aaron Rodgers, but I think it certainly is something that Matt Ryan has learned to improve upon in recent years, and I think is one of the reasons why, in my eyes, I think for a large stretch of the Steve Sarkisian era of the Falcons offense, Matt Ryan was sort of carrying Sark to a certain extent, because a lot of the Falcons' offensive success, whether it was moving the chains, whether it was Matt Ryan extending the plays to buy more times for receivers like Sanu or for receivers like Jones and Hooper, et cetera, to break open, I think a lot of that sort of was hinged on Matt Ryan's ability to go in above and beyond the level, the design of the play, and do some of this off structure and extension stuff outside the pocket to sort of boost the Falcons offense and make it look better than what it is. So I think for those reasons, Dirk Koetter is coming into a situation certainly better than what it was when he was previously here, with better wide receivers, or at least more dynamic wide receivers. You know, Tony Gonzalez is very good. We'll touch upon the tight end position. And none of our tight ends are touching Tony Gonzalez in terms of their reliability. But I think you can certainly make a case that Hooper and potentially whoever the Falcons may add to that position in the future are more dynamic weapons than Tony Gonzalez was. But again, that's a conversation for another day. And, you know, that's the main thing I want to say about Matt Ryan's season. Again, you have two sort of, you know, the high where he's an MVP quarterback, the low where he's just, you know, basically an average quarterback, and some of that, a lot of that, I think, is attributed to his supporting cast. And so it's, you know, whether you can get the supporting cast to consistently play to its peak levels is sort of what determines, in my opinion, whether you get MVP Matt Ryan, you know, that A++ level Matt Ryan, or you just get the quote unquote B plus Matt Ryan. And if your supporting cast isn't, you know, performing at a B plus or A minus level, then, you know, that's going to lead to some of the struggles that we saw through the Falcons offense in the second half of the season. So we'll come back in just a moment and talk about the Falcons backup quarterback situation. But before we get there, I do want to let you guys know that while we're stuck on sort of reviewing the end of the 2018 season for the Falcons, we are in the midst or at the beginning of the offseason. And of course, there are two podcasts devoted to the offseason, particularly the NFL Draft on the Locked On Podcast Network. They are, of course, the Locked On NFL Draft podcast with hosts John Ledger and Trevor Sikkema, as well as the Draft Dudes podcast with hosts Joe Marino and Kyle Krabs. Find them both wherever you get your Locked On podcast, as well as at thedraftnetwork.com, where you can find those guys, as well as several others, draft-related content. They're down in Mobile, Alabama this week for the Senior Bowl, so you guys definitely want to subscribe to both of those podcasts so you get all of the Senior Bowl takes, because you know the Falcons are going to be taking some Senior Bowl guys come April. And so you can find that, again, wherever you get your Locked On podcast, your team every day. So let's wrap things up talking about the backup quarterback situation. You have Matt Schaub, the incumbent backup, who is going to be a free agent this offseason. And basically the Falcons have two choices. This is generally the two directions that most NFL teams go in when it comes to their backup quarterback. They either go in the direction of, let's get a veteran who's basically going to essentially be an extra quarterback coach in the film room, has experience, knows the offense, and so sort of can help the starting quarterback, you know, give him an extra set of eyes and an extra brain to sort of break things down and help him out in the film room. And that's basically what Matt Schaub has been the last couple of seasons. Or the other direction is to basically go with a young developmental option. And seemingly that's what the Falcons are presumably hoping to do with Kurt Benkert. We'll sort of see what Benkert does, if he shows any growth or potential in his second summer coming back in 2019. But, you know, a lot of teams will often draft guys to do that. Personally, I think given that you expect, at least for me, I expect Matt Ryan to play at least another 5 years in Atlanta, drafting a quarterback doesn't make a whole lot of sense, just because those guys only have 4-year contracts and you're not going to be able to sort of reap the rewards potentially if you do hit on that quarterback long term, because you're going to have to either decide to pay him or let him walk before Matt Ryan is done. So personally, I think the Falcons can probably afford to wait another 2 or 3 years before really investing significantly in the draft as far as trying to find a developmental quarterback, and whether that means keeping a guy like Matt Schaub or going with another veteran. You have a couple of notable guys that at least have some experience in the dirt cutter offense from his Tampa Bay days, including Ryan Fitzpatrick, who's a free agent this offseason, Ryan Griffin, who was their number three in Tampa Bay. Fitzpatrick is probably going to be considerably more expensive than Matt Schaub will be. Griffin will probably be cheaper. You also have a guy like Trevor Siemian, who's, you know, experienced working with Greg Knapp from his days in Denver, also a free agent. So Simeon's probably going to be considerably cheaper from Matt Schaub. I think the big question is, I expect Matt Schaub to be re-signed because I don't expect the Falcons to want to switch that up for any particular reason. To me, the question is going to be sort of how much you have to pay to keep Matt Schaub. And for me, you know, you remove guys like Flacco, you remove guys like Foles from the equation, and just look at the top 10 number two quarterbacks in terms of what their cap hit is going to be in 2019. Number one at the top of that list is Chase McDaniel at $6 million. Number 10 at that list is CJ Beathard, who's a little shy of $1 million. And those 10 guys on average make about $3.4 million or are expected to count that much money against next year's cap. And so that's basically, you know, so $3.5 million is sort of what you would expect Matt Ryan's quote-unquote market rate to be. And so to me, the question is, can the Falcons re-sign Matt Schaub? Matt Schaub for cheaper than that, or are they going to have to pay market rate? If they have to pay like a 1 year, 3.5 or 2 year, $7 million deal, I think that's okay. It's not ideal, but I think ideally you can sort of get him for cheaper than that, maybe a 1 year, 2.5, a 2 year, $5 million deal. That would be ideal in my eyes. And if you can do that, then I think it's more than worthwhile to retain Matt Schaub, because I'd much rather have Matt Schaub at, you know, two and a half or $3 million than say a Colt McCoy or Blaine Gabbert or Drew Stanton or Mike Glennon and some of those guys that are making more than that potentially in 2019. So that's sort of how I feel about it. But I think there's an option that the Falcons could draft a young quarterback. I doubt they'll turn the keys completely over to Kurt Benkert. I think in all likelihood, if they do pass on Matt Schaub, or Matt Schaub decides to retire, he is getting up there in age, and he's going to be like, what, 36, 37 or something like that. I do expect if they do move on from Matt Schaub, they won't, if they do, if Kurt Benkert, they'll bring in some competition for Kurt Benkert, whether that's a veteran guy or whether that's a draft pick on day three, late in day three, will have to remain to be seen. If they do draft a quarterback, I think more than likely you'll see them looking at some of these all-star game prospects, whether it's a Senior Bowl guy, an East-West Shrine game, etc. Some of the last recent guys that the Falcons have sort of seemingly brought in with the idea of them being sort of their developmental backups, whether it was Baker, who was a Senior Bowl attendee, or Sean Renfrey back in 2013, the last quarterback they drafted, he played in the East-West Shrine game. So I think there's a pretty good bet that if the Falcons do try to bring in, whether it's an undrafted free agent to compete with Benkert or somebody who's going to compete with Benkert and be that number two, you're very likely to see a guy that's one of these all-star game attendees. That's been the MO of the Dan Quinn era, to rely heavily on the all-star games to basically do their scouting work. And so we'll have to see how that goes. But long story short, if I'm predicting sort of who the four quarterbacks are going to be in camp, it's probably going to be Matt Ryan, Matt Schaub back at the number two, Kurt Benkert back for another year to potentially push Schaub or spend another year on the practice squad. Or potentially if he performs well enough, the Falcons might carry three quarterbacks potentially. And they'll probably bring in another undrafted guy to sort of compete with Benkert and be that sort of practice squad or number three option. So there you have it, guys. That is basically the quarterback review in a nutshell. Overall, Matt Schaub will probably be back. Overall, I think looking back at this 2018 season, you had an elite level of Matt Ryan play, and then you had a not-so-elite level of Matt Ryan play. And I don't think that's necessarily because Matt Ryan was significantly different. I think probably more, he had some more struggles, obviously, in that nine-game stretch where he was playing middling. You know, the Cleveland game stands out as one of his in the Philadelphia game stand out as two of the games where he probably had most, probably two of his three or four worst games last season. But for the most part, it wasn't like Matt Ryan was playing terrible in those times. It just was, he wasn't playing amazing. He wasn't playing, you know, above and beyond the level of his protection, as some of those stats indicated. There were more turnovers, more missed opportunities, all those sorts of things that led to some of the downturn in the offense. And I think a lot of that had to do with not getting them, you know, Calvin Ridley hitting that wall and whatnot. And we'll touch upon a little bit more of that when we get to the wide receiver position. But that's basically what I wanted to say about this quarterback position. And we'll be back later this week with the running back. I don't know whether it's going to be tomorrow or Friday, but you know, with the schedule, with these year-end reviews, there's just sort of a way that I can sort of fit in. You know, we'll probably wind up doing at least two this week, if not three, and probably three or four of them each week for the next couple of weeks to wrap things up. And just the ways that I can basically like, oh, let me throw up a podcast and we'll do the running backs, or we'll do the wide receivers, or we'll do the tight ends or whatever moving forward over the next couple of weeks. There's just no sort of set schedule. But maybe by next week we'll get into a sort of set schedule as we move forward. But if you have any comments or questions or suggestions, you can, of course, send them in to me on Twitter. I'm at FalcFans. But since it's podcast related, just go ahead, send it to Locked On Falcons. That's the show's Twitter handle. Locked On Falcons is the name of the Facebook page where you can also submit your questions and comments. You can send them via email at lockedonfalcons@mail.com, or you can leave a comment at falcfans.com where the podcast is posted daily. So again, we'll be back later this week with the running back review. We might do another Q&A to wrap up the week, but more than likely, we'll probably do the running backs. And depending on if you guys send in questions, we'll do a Q&A. If you guys don't send in a bunch of questions, we'll do the fullback review, and then we'll just save those questions till Monday, and we'll do a mailbag then. So that's the plan for now. So send in those questions if you have them. Send in those comments if you have them. And we'll let you guys tailor the schedule at least for the rest of this week. So there's part one of our roster review series. We got a dozen more parts to go. So it's going to take a couple of weeks to get through this. But until then.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.